Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Yes Indeed podcast, created by Mark Shepherd and run by me, Thomas Manuel. Today, we're speaking to Graham Walmsley, probably best known for Cthulhu Duck. This interview covers Graham talking about moving on from Lovecraftian horror to other kinds of horror and what that sort of like opens up. I think there's some interesting discussion about weird fiction and science fiction and why horror is good for stories. I think that kind of sneaks in as well. And how there's a fuzzy line between rule setting and advice. I think that's a really interesting thing that comes up. But before we get to the interview, we cracked $300 and 119 patrons this month, which is very cool. At the start of the year, I ran a Patreon drive trying to hit 150 patrons. And that was an ambitious goal. I am blown away by the fact that I'm even here. And I'm already mentally, maybe not physically, mentally working on Fantasy Cities Volume 2, which is the thing I will release when we hit 150 patrons. And I think it's going to happen. And I cannot wait. Anyway, thanks to everybody who supports me on Patreon. I'm extremely, extremely grateful. I literally recorded this episode yesterday and I'm releasing it today. And that's pretty cool. Anyway, enough chit-chat. Let's get to the interview. Hello, everyone. I'm sitting down with Graham Walmsley, the celebrated designer behind tabletop RPGs like Cthulhu Dark and A Taste for Murder, LARPs like Will That Be All, and Lovecraftian scenarios for games like Trail of Cthulhu. He's also the author of two non-fiction books, Stealing Cthulhu, which is about telling Lovecraftian stories, and Play Unsafe, which are improv techniques for being a better player of tabletop RPGs. And this year, he's got two new games out, Cosmic Dark, a kind of spiritual sequel to Cthulhu Dark, but featuring corporate employees in space, and then Darkenwood, a GM-less game about people in a nightmarish forest. Hi, Graham. Welcome to the show. Excited to chat with you.
Hello. Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, and there's also all kinds of loads of weird little other games as well, which I know you can't list anything, but in a way, I'm proud of just like, you know, the weird food LARP I wrote and things like that.
What is this weird food LARP that
I wrote a game called Marinara, which was it's a LARP about sort of immigration and food, and it's a LARP where you make characters by tasting food, and then you build relationships with everyone else by tasting food as well, and you eat foods together. I just love that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with LARP, so I end up not talking about it. So I think my first question is, you know, with Cthulhu Dark, Stealing Cthulhu, your scenarios for Trail of Cthulhu, you've become kind of associated, I think, for most people with Lovecraftian stories specifically. So was there something that drew you to that genre? Was this on purpose? Do you think of yourself as somebody who's very interested in that? Or is this something that just kind of you stumbled into? You did one and then you did the other and now you're here.
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. I think I probably stumbled into it. Like I'd love to say that, you know, that I had this sort of deep love of it. I mean, I've always liked horror. So I'm a Brit and I grew up with Doctor Who and Doctor Who is absolutely horror. So, you know, from a child I've been watching some sort of horror and it progressed from there. And yeah, so I fell into writing for Trail of Cthulhu, which was I'd never really sort of thought of writing Lovecraftian stuff, but I started doing that. And I think I think now I'd rather be thought of as someone who sort of writes in the tradition of weird fiction rather than someone who specifically writes stuff from H.P. Lovecraft. So I think one of the things I'm really trying to do for myself is, you know, not just kind of go, okay, Lovecraft, how do we do Lovecraft? But kind of go, okay, well, there's a whole broad swathe of weird fiction out there. So there's all kinds of things going on. How can we draw from that?
Actually, I'm interested in that very first bit of RPG writing you did. Like, how did that first scenario, that first Lovecraftian scenario happen? Because the first thing you write, I think, will say something about what you think is, you know, was interesting about Lovecraft and gaming also, I imagine.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. So my first scenario was called The Dying of St. Margaret. And I knew the publisher of Trail of Cthulhu. So before Trail of Cthulhu came out, I knew there was this Lovecraftian game. And I started thinking about what horror stories I would want to tell. And when I've read weird fiction, when I've read Lovecraft, the stories that get me are the completely bleak and hopeless ones. I have this vivid memory of reading Dagon by H.P. Lovecraft and then coming out and going, oh, wow, yeah, it was just completely bleak and hopeless. And it put me in this really weird headspace, which I quite liked. But a lot of Call of Cthulhu games are not like that. So you play a lot of Call of Cthulhu games and there's a lot of cultists and some puzzles to figure out. At the end, there's a battle or there's a ritual and, you know, and you make it all right. And I was thinking, well, what does a Lovecraft scenario look like if it's, you can't make it right? It's actually just very bleak.
And was this a sentiment that runs from that first scenario all the way to Cthulhu Dark?
So I think the first scenarios, or the scenarios I did for Trail of Cthulhu, all of them were trying to break something. They were trying to sort of change something that I wanted to change about scenarios. The first one was basically, okay, what happens if you have a scenario that you can't win? And then the second scenario, Watchers in the Sky, I was kind of getting sick of scenarios where you kind of go, okay, and there's someone and they've got big eyes and everyone goes, oh, it's a deep one. Okay, right, we know what deep ones are. There was this real tension in games that, you know, once the players figured out what kind of creature it was, they were like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on here. And so I wanted to get away from that. So my second scenario was basically, it was very deliberately a creature that you could not know. Yes, yeah, so the players never figure out what creature is behind it. And then I think the third scenario, Dance in the Blood, which is probably one of the best I've written, is a scenario where you end up being the monster. And yeah, so those ones, I think I was very deliberately trying to subvert something about scenarios. And then I think later on, I mean, moving into sort of Cthulhu Dark, I kept the same kind of tone of bleak horror, but there were other things I was trying to play with.
I think that sentiment of sort of Lovecraftian horrors becoming kind of taxonomized, right? Like, it's something that, and you mentioned weird fiction. This is something that I think, you know, China Mirville talks about this desire to give Cthulhu a stat block, you know?
Yes.
And ZXU has talked about specifically this kind of, you know, D&D driven obsession with taxonomies and stat blocks, which is a kind of like ordering of things into a form that you can not only comprehend, but can conquer. Like, yeah. So is your move toward weird fiction, again, just following that trajectory of like, you know, I need to keep things slightly out of grasping distance, you know, just keeping that distance. Is that it?
Yeah, partly. When I wrote Stealing Cthulhu, that was very definitely a book that talks a lot about Lovecraft. And it's sort of, how do you tell a story that's like Lovecraft? And when I wrote the rulebook of Cthulhu Dark, I was getting more and more uncomfortable with Lovecraft, you know, because Lovecraft himself is racist, and because I think if you read a lot of Lovecraft stories, that there's this, well, undertone of, you know, definitely misogyny, misanthropy, racism, all of that. And it's just, I was getting more and more uncomfortable with writing Lovecraftian stuff. And so I think especially after I wrote Cthulhu Dark, I really wanted to get away from that. And I kind of didn't know how, because, you know, like, Lovecraft is the guy, you know, how do you write something which isn't Lovecraft? And so one of my ways out of doing that was reading more broadly around weird fiction, reading Lovecraft contemporary. So, you know, so reading a bit of Algernon Blackwood and so on, who also write these very weird stories. And I think Algernon Blackwood, a lot of his stuff is much better than Lovecraft, but without the sort of emphasis on these, you know, these monsters. And then, I mean, more modern stuff as well. So, you know, there's some absolutely amazing modern horror. There's a woman called Daisy Johnson, and she has a radio serial called The Hotel, which is very bleak and weird. I mean, there's loads of podcasts. I mean, if you've listened to something like Limetown, for example, that's an extraordinary weird podcast. And then just sort of horror, like, I mean, you know, Sarah Perry writes a lot of horror. Books like The Essex Serpent, which is probably not weird fiction, but probably a bit more gothic. And I'm talking a lot, but do you know what I mean? I think there is this broad spectrum of weird fiction, which I think is great and worth celebrating. And I think things get much more exciting once you say there is this world of stuff you could be exploring, rather than kind of going, let's do Lovecraft. You know, I think that's a good thing for us to be doing.
There's also this kind of sense of doing Lovecraft because that's what we've been doing.
Yes.
Right? We've been making Lovecraft games since the beginning of the idea of making tabletop RPGs existed, right?
Well, I think it's become this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that, I mean, you know, a lot of it comes from the game Call of Cthulhu, which is, you know, bills itself as a Lovecraft game. And if I've got a wish for Call of Cthulhu 8th edition, is that the next one that's coming out? If I've got a wish, it's that they say that it's a game about weird fiction, or a game about Lovecraft and other authors, as opposed to this is a Lovecraft game.
Okay. What do you think is, what do you mean when you say weird fiction?
Mm.
I think I have a sense in my head, but I'm not sure whether that's the same thing that you're talking about.
I don't know. I can try, right? And also it's quite nice not to define it. So it's fiction. Well, should we talk about what it's not, right? So, you know, it's not zombie fiction, right? It's not gore. It's not slasher horror. So it's much more leaning into the idea of something a bit alien, something a bit, you know, life which has gone a bit weird, creatures that have gone a bit strange. So this idea of the uncanny, right? So, you know, things that we know, but they're different from the way they know them. We know them. I also think it's worth thinking about things being surreal. So you can, Jeff Vandermeer's stuff is very good with this. So if you read like a book like Annihilation, or watch the film of Annihilation, you do sort of get humans and creatures merging together. So this is a total non-answer to your question. But I think, you know, messing around with life, messing around with things merging together which shouldn't be, things that are living in ways they shouldn't be. I think that's the kind of horror I'm interested in.
I think Jeff Vandermeer is a good shout, because it does feel like people really love his work as well.
Mm.
I don't know what genre that work is classified in, you know, at bookstores or anything like that, but it is kind of hard to classify.
Well, so it's one reason that the next game I'm writing is Cosmic Dark, which is science fiction. And one of the things I love about that is writing in this tradition of surreal science fiction. So J.G. Ballard is an author who, I mean, I think talks himself about surrealism. And I mean, you know, there's other authors you can seize on there. Maybe a bit of Ursula Le Guin, Octavia Butler, that kind of thing. I think one of the most freeing things about Cosmic Dark is that it's given me new ways to write horror. And there's something about science fiction which does that. So as soon as you do science fiction horror, you know, you're in the rules, you're in the realm of different realities, things messing with realities, you know, things messing with time. And so as soon as you've got things messing with time, you can do time is running slowly, time loops, flashing back in time, time travel, all of that. And I mean, what I found when I did Cosmic Dark was that I instantly had about six scenarios which kind of just popped into my head, and it was amazing. And I'd write one scenario, and then I was like, wait, I haven't done anything with doppelgangers. I want to do something with doppelgangers now. And so I did, you know, a doppelganger scenario. And so I just found science fiction so freeing. It was just such an amazing experience writing horror in it.
Is it something about the fact that it is kind of modern and scientific that makes the weird and, you know, improbable scarier?
Because I think one of the things about science fiction is that it's really not set in the future, it's set now, which is really interesting. So, you know, I mean, the setting for Cosmic Dark is you're working for a company called Extraxa, who, you know, basically, spoiler, in every scenario, they send you somewhere and expect you to die. And they knew about what was happening in advance, but they're fine with it because it makes them a profit. That's a spoiler for every single Cosmic Dark scenario, just so you know. But of course, that's not really talking about corporations in the near future. It's a way of, I'm not saying companies are like that, but it's a way of interrogating modern anxieties about work. It's a way of talking about work. So I've forgotten what question you asked. Sorry. But yeah, but that's important, isn't it? That, you know, science fiction is, you know, it gives you a way of things that are happening now rather than a way of talking about history.
Let's talk about Cosmic Dark.
Yeah.
Going back to this whole conversation about what is weird fiction, right? Mm. This game is very similar to Cthulhu Dark in terms of rule structure. One small nudge you've made is that there's no more sanity die. I think that's what it's called in Cthulhu Dark. And now it's called the change die.
Yeah.
And it represents physical or mental change. Yeah. That feels like a move to kind of capture what is the horror you're going for.
Yes. Right?
This is a horror about like change. So
that's body horror. So it takes it into body horror, right? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think the rules have changed quite a lot from Cthulhu Dark. And I think a lot of other people will look at them and go, well, that's basically Cthulhu Dark. The structure is still Cthulhu Dark. But one of the really important ones is that in Cthulhu Dark, you have an insight score, and when something, you know, messes with your mind, you roll that. Yeah. In Cosmic Dark, if someone messes with your body, something messes with your body or your mind, you roll your change score. And so what that ends up being is that, you know, it incorporates things that freak you out, but also if your body is changing in a weird way, and that happens quite a lot in these scenarios, because I am sort of messing around with body horror.
Another thing is, I read your scenario extraction, and I think, first of all, for listeners, you've done something really cool where you've kind of written out the scenario and inserted the rules in the middle so that they come up as the GM or MC or whoever is kind of running the scenario. Why did you make that decision?
Wow, all these different reasons. One thing is that I've started to love, so when I run a game session, one of the things I've started to love doing is actually not doing character creation, but just launching straight into the game, because it's fun, because you can do character creation during the game and it works really well. And so, you know, so we'll all sit down and I will say, okay, you ready to start? And they'll go, yes. And I'll go, okay, right. The four of you are descending to an asteroid, and you can see this glowing asteroid beneath you. And then we're going to flesh out the characters as we go.
That was really interesting when I read it. And I also heard you kind of execute this in an actual play, and it worked, you know, like that's the thing. I think someone reading this might, you know, in case you have a question about whether does this work or not, I'll try to link to that actual play so people can also see how you kind of ran that scenario. You do this other thing also, where you kind of, in the beginning of the scenario, you ask players to kind of give you something that their character is afraid of, and then you incorporate it again. What are you trying to do there?
One of the things I've tried to do in Cosmic Dark is, so rather than give people storytelling guidance, when I wrote Cthulhu Dark, there's a lot of storytelling guidance in there. So what I've tried to lead into is sort of making things part of the game. So one of the things I tend to do in my Cthulhu Dark scenarios is when we're creating characters, I say something like, you know, I'd like you to have a link to this particular character. I'd like you to have, you know, some sort of link to the idea of darkness. And then later in the scenario, I go, okay, you know, you're in the darkness and all your fears about the darkness are coming back. So I do this quite a lot. And so I just wanted to formalize that. And so Cosmic Dark, you know, every scenario starts with this thing called the psych assessment, where you have this voice on board the spaceship, which asks you some questions. And so it will, you know, it will say things like, Thomas, if you had to kill someone, who would you kill? You don't have to answer that. That's just like, and so everyone will get asked one of these questions, and then those are brought back in a quite specific way later in the scenario. And it's just quite nice. It's just it's a bit of a storytelling tool. It's a bit of a way of making the horror personal, but it's baked into the scenario, so it doesn't like rely on your GM skills to do it.
Okay, so listeners, Extraction is a scenario about these employees of some kind of, you know, space corporation visiting an asteroid of some kind. And at some point in the text, there's this following section. And this is a part of what we were talking about in terms of character creation during play. It says, describe these two employees playing together as children. If it's a rural planet, perhaps they're playing in the fields. If it's a forest planet, perhaps they're hiding in the trees, and so on. Ask one of the players to say, it's time to go. Then ask them to keep the conversation going, speaking as their employees and describing what their employees do. When they've talked for about a minute, find a good place to stop. Now, you are feeding players a dialogue. Like, this is really interesting. Like, what are you trying to do here?
It's all part of character creation. So, yeah, I just find it a really interesting way of doing character creation. So, I mean, let me start from the beginning, right? So, you know, so the first thing that happens in a game of Cosmic Dark is you hear a voice on communicators. You're descending to the asteroid and the shuttle, and you get this voice on the communicator that says, employees, you're descending to the surface of asteroid C151. Medical officer, please report. And so the voice on the communicator goes through all these occupations, and you know, and you wait for each of the players to answer. So when a player says yes, then that makes them the medical officer. And I was just trying to think of like ways that you could do all the bits of character creation in the fiction. One thing I was a bit stuck on was relationships. So because, you know, for me, it's really important that you start characters with, you know, with relationships with other characters. And so the way Cosmic Dark does that is you flash back in time and you tell stories of how the characters grew up together. You know, so if we're playing Cosmic Dark, you know, we will just do a little initial bit where we decide what our occupations are. So, you know, so Thomas, you'll be the medical officer and I will be the mining engineer. And then we will flash back in time to the planet we grew up on, and we'll play through all these little scenes. So, you know, we will play a scene where we're playing together as children and blah, 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 blah. And so it's a nice way of establishing a little relationship between us, but also it takes us through, like in about 15 minutes, it takes us through this really deep backstory of how all these people grew up together and found themselves mining an asteroid.
The dialogue also seems to, when I saw you run this, seems to prompt people into talking in first person immediately.
Yes. So, yeah, the way it works, because it's very hard. Like, if you just sat down at a table with like new players, you can't just kind of say, okay, the two of you are playing it together as children. Start talking, go. You know, players hate that kind of thing. And so the best thing I could think of was to give someone an initial line they could say. So it's just like you have one line to start the scene. And so in the first scene, the line is, it's time to go. So basically you have these two players growing up, and or these two characters growing up, and the first line of the scene is, it's time to go. And then the other two will continue talking from there. Finding good first lines that start scenes was really interesting. So that, I mean, the lines at the moment are, it's time to go, you know what I do better than you, what do you think will happen to us?
Another thing that's interesting about feeding players a line is it fits with something that I understand very well, which is that people hate a blank page, yes, but they love a question. You know what I mean? So that's questions are my go-to kind of tool for this. Ask a question, they'll give you an answer, and you've got, you know, you've got people talking, you've got people creating, you've got people being kind of inventive and stuff. So you chose to not go with question and said to give them a line to say. What's the advantage, do you think, of one over the other?
I think it's because I'm trying to play a scene with two people and start off a conversation with them. There's other times when I've used a question. So, you know, for example, I ran a scenario called Miskatonic Shoreside Conservatory for Symphony Entertainment. And that's online and people can go and listen to it. And that also, I use a really similar technique of, you know, we flash back in time. But there, what I say is things like, okay, your character, you know, the first thing we hear is them playing some music. What music is it? And that's a really fun way of doing it as well. But that doesn't establish relationships so much. It kind of delves right into the music they're playing.
You know, if you told me I'm feeding someone a dialogue, I would think that it would be too specific. But the line is so open-ended. It's the next thing that you say after that's actually the thing that's going to make this, it's going to concretize the scenario and, you know, give us a direction. And that's still something that the player is going to come up with.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, so this whole idea of giving players a line to start a scene with, there were some very bad lines that I tried at first. So for a while, the line that started the first scene was, my foot's stuck, can you help me? And it seemed a really great line, right? Because, you know, it instantly gets you into a scene, but actually all the scenes sounded like this. Ooh, yeah, okay, my foot's stuck. Yeah, okay, try pulling it. Okay, now, I'll pull it. No, it's still stuck. It was awful. It was just so bad. So thinking of the right lines to kick off a scene was, it took me a long time.
Nice, yeah, I think I did hear in the actual play, my foot stuck.
That's
not
right.
This line. Yeah.
It used to be the line. And if you've got good players, it's fine. But it doesn't always work.
Seeing that a lot in this game's design, every single part of this document that I'm reading is wrestling with this question of, like, you know, is this rule? Is this setting?
Yes.
Is this GM advice? It's not clear. Like, it's all kind of there together. And Weird Fiction has this idea of, like, you know, slipping between genres and things like that. And I feel like this text is also kind of just slipping between what is the rule and what is the setting and what is GM advice.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, it's a definite decision where I'm trying to explain the rules as part of a particular scenario, right? So, you know, Extraction is the starting Cosmic Dark scenario. I think there are a couple of games that have done this. So, well, you know, I mean, lots of indie games, for example, have one particular story they will take you through. You know, Monsecure 1244, there is a story which you're going to play through. So I partly got it from there. But also, I mean, there's a game called Las Vegas by James Wallace, which I read through. And I thought that's very interesting because it's, you know, it's a game which it has its own, it has its own system, which is you do with cards, but it also has a set of scenarios that you play with. And I was like, oh, okay. He's baked the scenario into the system. That's really interesting. And so I just wanted to play around with that a bit.
Stepping back a little bit and going back to this idea, when you first released Cthulhu Dark, it was this slim four-page, people would describe it probably as all rules.
Yeah.
Right? And then when you expanded into a full book, the major additions were a bunch of GM advice and a lot of scenarios, but also there were some changes, I think, in terms of things that were rules before became advice. a little bit, like in the sense that I think you, this might be a very early version, but was there something called the Dark Depths framework or something like that, which was about, and you kind of turned that into advice as well. So I think you're thinking about what is a good rule and when it should be advice. And do you have a sense of like what is that line for you? Or what are you trying to do when you make something a rule versus make something advice?
Oh, it's so hard. Yeah. So I mean, what you're talking about there with Dark Depths, sort of something I sketched out where you had three levels to an adventure. And, you know, you had the first level and then it got deadlier and deadlier. And it's a really interesting question. So how do you deal with that in a game? Do you say, okay, this is a rule. There are three different phases of this scenario. There's this phase and now you descend into this. Or do you say, okay, here's some storytelling advice. Just imagine that there are three different, you know, and it's really difficult. In Cthulhu Dark, I generally leaned into advice. And in Cosmic Dark, I'm generally leaning into rules. So actually, I've been writing this today. Cosmic Dark scenarios do have three levels. They start with the weird level where you're wandering around, you're investigating things, and things are weird, but they're not necessarily harmful. And then it's the dangerous level where you're wandering around and, you know, it's obvious things are dangerous, but they're not necessarily deadly. And then finally, the final level is everything is bad. You know, people are dying, and now you've got to solve it. So it's really fascinating, that choice. And there's, you know, I think another really interesting game to look at is Brindlewood Bay, which is another investigative game. And that is quite, that leads heavily into the rules, right? So in Cthulhu Dark, you know, you have an investigative role, and, you know, when you want to find something, you roll some dice, and if you know, you find stuff out. Brindlewood Bay has something like that, but you have a sheet of clues for each scenario. And if you want to, you know, if you want to investigate, you do a roll. And if you succeed, you get a clue. And the GM chooses a clue from that list and gives you it. And that's really interesting. And I think there's advantages and disadvantages both ways, right? If you give someone a rule, then it's a very definite thing. It's very easy for the player because it's like, it's a rule. I don't have to think about it. The danger is that you're giving someone something that doesn't quite fit with the story they're telling. So that's the problem, right? I mean, Brindlewood Bay works very well, but that's the risk that you kind of go, okay, I'm giving you a clue from this list, but actually I can't see a clue on this list, which I particularly like. Or, you know, we're descending into the third phase now, but actually it doesn't feel as though we should descend into the third phase. It feels as though we're still in the second phase. So that's the danger of a rule, which is that it feels wrong to the players. You've given them a rule that something should happen, but that feels wrong as part of the story. But then the danger of just giving players advice is that you're kind of just leaving it up to them and putting all the burden on them, and you're giving them a bit of advice, but then they have to use their storytelling skills. So you're expecting a lot of skill from them.
So why did you kind of, as a designer, lean into rules for Cosmic Dark? Like, this feels like you described it as a change, right?
Because I wanted to play with it. You know, because I think it's a different space to explore. Because I think rules can be very helpful for people. And I really enjoyed writing Cthulhu Dark, which has a lot of storytelling advice. But I also like saying to people, this is a rule. And it's a way of giving people training wheels, right? It's a way of helping people tell stories. Because actually, once you've given them the rule, once they get really good at it, they can start breaking the rule. I was talking about Brindlewood Bay, where, you know, you roll and you pick from a list of clues and the GM gives you a clue. Well, actually, it's not quite as simple as that. Because in Brindlewood Bay, there is something in the rules that say, you know, if you want to change one of the clues slightly, you can. And so that's very clever, right? Because you're both giving people the training wheels. So you're giving them a rule which makes things easier for them. But for advanced players, they can start messing around with it. And they, you know, they can say, oh, well, actually, I'm going to give you a slightly different clue here. And so I'm trying to do a lot of that with Cosmic Dark. You know, so in Cosmic Dark, there's a rule that if you roll a 5, you get a record, which is like an extracts a file. But there is a provision, and the extracts the record sort of says one of 3 or 4 things. But actually, you are allowed to make up your own record as well, so it's okay.
So this is that tension of giving somebody support while leaving space for their own creativity and stuff like that. And
yeah,
to some extent, I think that's almost how I define a good rule, right? A good rule is good if I find it useful in telling the story that I find interesting and exciting. If it's not helpful to me, that's when I start going like, oh, is this a good rule? Is this a bad rule? When you step away from advice to rules, you also are like keeping in mind that these rules have to be generally applicable.
Yes, that's true. Can I mention history in Cosmic Dark? Because that's fascinating. Yeah. So the other thing which is really great about science fiction is that it gives you a new way to write about history. So do you remember, we had a conversation about Cosmic Dark a couple of years ago, didn't we, on email?
Oh, over email, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was trying to, you know, we were trying to sort of think of scenarios that we could write. And I was deliberately trying to, you know, lean into different sorts of histories. I think at the time I was sort of thinking about histories of like the Opium War and the East India Company, you know, there's no way I can write a Cthulhu Dark scenario where you go, okay, you know, you're now investigators in the Opium War. It'd be terrible. I can't do that. Do you remember that conversation? So what we said about writing history?
I remember things, but nothing helpful.
You said something to me which was really helpful when we were talking about that, which was, you basically said, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, but you basically said, look, Graham, you can't just do the East India Company in space. Because it would be a terrible scenario, right? You know, I could kind of go, okay, you know, so Extractor is sending you to this planet, and halfway through, everyone would think, this is just the East India Company in space. And it would be very, very bad. That approach can sometimes work really well. So I know Jason Morningstar has, you know, has sometimes used science fiction to explore very specific scenarios. I think where I've used Cosmic Dark to explore history, what I've done is I've taken influences. I've tried to sort of echo the themes of histories I've been reading in the scenarios. So in a lot of Cosmic Dark scenarios, you will see, you know, they imagine what happens when the free market, or, you know, when a company can just do whatever they want. And pretty much that, you know, there's a lot of histories which inform that. I mean, you know, that's the East India Company. That's the Opium War. That's all kinds of other histories. So they're informed by the themes there. And the other one is war, right? So, I mean, I was reading social histories of the Second World War. I was reading histories of the war in Burma. So in the Second World War, one of the things that happened was that a lot of soldiers were sort of sent to Burma. You know, imagine sort of, you know, young working class soldiers. They'd never been out of the country. They'd hardly been out of their town before. And suddenly they are in what seems to them to be a totally alien landscape. And their mission is basically just kind of, you know, to creep up the coast. And all the while they're making it through these, you know, these plants which are deadly, alien. And I took a lot of inspiration from that. I mean, again, you know, there is not a Burmese war scenario in, well, actually there kind of is, but, you know, it's not a scenario where you can go that, you know, this is the Burmese war here, but it's really influenced by the themes.
In the first section called Infectious Enthusiasm, I ask, what's a game that you've had a lot of fun with and you want to recommend to my listeners?
I want to recommend a game called Lumberjills, which is an absolutely fascinating game by Moira Turkington. And it is a LARP, but stay with me. It's a game about a very specific historical thing which happened, which was in the Second World War, a lot of women were sent to forests all around the UK to cut trees. So one of the ways you could volunteer in the in the Second World War, you could go and be a forester and you'd learn to be a forester. And so, you know, the New Forest, not too far where I live, this happened. And what happened was a lot of them were stationed near American air bases. And there was this wonderful situation where a lot of young women suddenly found that they had their pick of men. Because, you know, there were all these, you know, rather attractive men who from all around the world. And it's an amazing game, partly because it takes that very specific scenario and it makes it into this sort of rather lovely romantic game where, you know, you have cards with the names of men on them and you can choose which you're going to dance with and have a scene with. And I absolutely love it. And it also does all kinds of other fascinating things. So it does something quite good with physicality. So you can imagine that we're playing this game, Thomas, and when we're sawing wood, we will sort of actually literally do that for a while. And it's while we're having a conversation. So I absolutely love Lumberjills.
Wow. That does sound really interesting.
It's so good. And I think one reason I wanted to recommend it was because I think there's a lot to learn from LARP. I also think LARP has a lot to learn from tabletop, but I think that's an interesting game where it kind of brings the two together to an extent, and it's using some very tabletop-like mechanics.
Lovely.
And I should say, I think it's kickstarting somewhere around now. So, I mean, depending on when you release this, maybe it's being kickstarted. Maybe the Kickstarter's just finished. I've no idea, but you can probably Google it and find it.
Okay. In the section called Tyranny of Numbers, I ask, is there a number, a statistic that you can share from your work?
Yeah, from my game work, 35%. You know the way the insight rules work in Cthulhu Dark, but I'm going to tell you, you know, I'm just going to explain this anyway. So in Cthulhu Dark, your insight starts at 1, and every time something happens that freaks you out, you roll a 6-sided die. I've got some dice here. And if you get more than your current insight score, it increases. So, you know, your insight will increase from 1 to 2 to 3 every time you roll over that score with a die. And when it gets to 6, then, you know, that's the end of the game. And there's a couple of really interesting things about that. I mean, partly because, you know, as your insights score increases, the probability of rolling over that with one die is less and less. So what happens is that your insight score shoots up at the start of the game and then leaves you teetering on the edge of, you know, you end up having 5 insight for a very long time, teetering on the edge of darkness. But the interesting thing for me is that if you do 10 insight rolls, which is more or less the number that you'll make during a game, the probability of getting to insight 6 is about 35%. If you do 12 insight rolls, the probability is about 50%. And so the point there is that if you've got 4 or 5 players around the table, and in the course of the game, they make like around 10 insight rolls, what will usually happen is one of them will hit insight 6 and the rest of them will be all teetering on the edge of madness. And that was really, really deliberate.
My third section titled Replay, I ask, is there a story or anecdote about someone playing one of your games with you there, even if you weren't there, that you heard that you'd enjoy sharing?
Okay. Yeah, I think I have something. It's actually from, I was running someone else's scenario. So I was running this amazing Cthulhu Dark scenario called Die Not Ingloriously by Rena Hayens. And in that scenario, so they've written this amazing scenario and it's ancient Greek. So it's Homer. And there's all these amazing things happening with the gods who are being capricious and taking sides in the Trojan War. Anyway, I played this with some players I hadn't played with before, and in it, the Furies were getting involved. And so the Furies are these creatures that come down with this amazing vengeance and hatred. And one of the characters decided he'd had enough of the Furies, and he just got really angry with them. And And basically, no, I'm going to attack the Furies. And you can see in my character's eyes that he's just consumed with this hatred, and he's going to destroy the Fury that's in front of him. And this is Cthulhu Dark, and he rolls a 6 while he's doing that. And because of this, this is the end of the game. What we decide is that because this character is filled with hate and rage and the desire for retribution, he's going to become a Fury. And he does. So he sprouts wings and he becomes a Fury. It's great.
Ah, that's lovely. Oh, that's fantastic.
I love it. What I especially like, actually, is the idea of the player, you know, advocating for his character, but then leaning into, like, playing to lose. I absolutely adore that.
Yeah. I think one of the big things we want out of stories are good endings. And the thing about horror is that it gives you a good ending. You know what I mean? And by good, I mean dramatic.
It is, isn't it one of the amazing things about horror that people are really good about playing to lose?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can play with pretty new Call of Cthulhu players and they'll be going, you know, and at the end, my character is dissected on an altar. And they're like, that's a good ending. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Let's get to my last question, which is in a section called All Advice is Advice for Myself. When I ask you, what's a habit or technique that you are trying to get better at your table when you play games?
Oh, I'm trying to take players' ideas and build my story on them. And I find this quite hard because one thing I'm very good at doing is a player will say something and I work it into the story. So, you know, so for example, like we're playing Cosmic Dark and you say, oh, you know, my character has this childhood song which they always sing to themselves. And look, at that point, that childhood song is totally coming back later in the adventure. You know, because that's a trick I use all the time, right? You know, you say this little thing in passing and I just kind of put it later in the adventure. And it's a really effective trick. But it isn't really building the story based on what you said. All it's doing is kind of weaving what you said into my story so it makes it, you know, so it makes it more relevant to you. And one thing I'm really trying to do is when someone tries to steer the story in a particular direction, me having the courage to kind of go, okay, no, we're going to go in that direction now. And that's, yeah, that's a hard thing to do.
Okay, Graham, thank you so much. Is there a specific place that you want my listeners to go to? So if they want to keep up with what you're doing, is there a social media link or something like that?
The best place is, I mean, because social media has all gone to hell in the last year or so. So the best place is probably my Patreon. So if you go to www.patreon.com/Graham, you can also find me in all the standard places. So I'm Graham Wormsley on Blue Sky and I'm on Dice Camp and, you know, whatever the other one's called these days, I'm on that.
Thanks for listening, folks. Next episode, we'll be talking to Sebastian Yue, who is a game designer who works full-time with Hit Point Press and has done a bunch of freelance work on games like Apocalypse Keys and even the new official Tomb Raider RPG coming out from Evil Hat. Till then, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.
And cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonian, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.